Welcome back to Scissors and Scrubs. Hopefully some right now we're in April and it's warm. Because right now we're not.
Gonna be warm.
We're in the beginning of April and it's still fucking freezing. So we work with a woman who listens, who we love to death.
Hi, Michelle.
She came up with an idea to cover, which it's hard to do because it's a lot of information. And it's the tsunami that hit Japan and things you don't think of, which were the hospitals that got decimated by the tsunami and all the people in it. So we're going to kind of cover about the tsunami, and Laura's going to kind of cover some of the hospital issues that happened. We can't really get into depth with it because it wasn't easy. I gave her the hot pot and she's just yelling at me that it was really sucked to do it.
Well, it's just kind of all over the place and not like very specific information.
So don't judge.
Don't
judge us on this episode, all right? Okay. So.
Did this remind you of something?
It reminds me of 5 days of Memorial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's 100%. Like, I was like, oh, it's like 5 days of Memorial. Oh, this is like
Except
5 days.
5 days of Memorial. I had a book to follow.
I know.
All right. I even have a movie now. This, when I was a kid, I envisioned tsunamis like as tall as the fucking Prudential building coming in and crashing into a thing, just fucking decimating. And if you ever see a tsunami, that is not what it looks like. And the wave is not as, I'm thinking 100 foot, like you could be out in the middle of an ocean in a storm and have bigger waves than a tsunami is. But it's how much power is behind that
all
wave.
All of the water
right.
coming.
It's the whole ocean's power behind it. So it's not the highest wave in the world. It just is a wave that never fucking stops.
Yeah.
So the phenomenon known as a tsunami or a tidal wave is a series of large waves of extremely long wavelength and period, usually generated by a violent, impulsive undersea disturbance, earthquake, or activity near the coast or in the ocean. So obviously that means earthquakes. Anytime there is an earthquake, wherever that earthquake happens, the surrounding areas near the ocean are going to be notified of a potential tsunami. And the way they explain it in there is like, picture you take the ocean floor up and you dump it, and it's going to create, like you drop a ball in the ocean, it's going to create waves that go in a circle. But when it's in the ocean, it's very fucking powerful waves that now have time to travel. And as they get close to shore and hit the sand, they're going to create a fucking tsunami. Okay. The waves travel out of the area of origin and can be extremely dangerous and damaging when they reach the shore. Tsunami waves often look like walls of water and it can attack the shoreline and be dangerous for hours with waves coming every 5 to 60 minutes. Again, thought it was one big fucking wave. Mm-hmm. No, it's not. The first wave may not be the largest, and it's often the second, third, or fourth, or even later waves that are the biggest. After one wave inundates or floods inland, it recedes seaward, often as far as a person can see, so the seafloor is exposed. That would freak me out.
That is, I know.
That would fucking freak me out.
Even when they show, remember the tsunami that happened in like
Malaysia or Thailand?
Somewhere. And like they showed all those people, the kids from the villages, like running out because the fish were just laying on the ground because the water had receded so far back.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, all that water is coming
in. One kid said he had just learned about tsunamis in school and he saw that happen. He told his parents, we have to leave. There's a tidal wave coming. And they're like, yeah, no. He's like, no, we got to leave.
Yeah.
And he saved his family because he had just learned about it in school. The next wave then rushes ashore within minutes and carries with it many floating debris that were destroyed by previous waves. When waves enter harbors, very strong and dangerous water currents are generated that can easily break ship moorings, and bores that travel far inland can be formed when tsunamis enter rivers or other water channels. So bores meaning other dangerous currents and stuff because they're colliding with rivers or whatever is far inland. All right. So in Japan, a magnitude 9.0 earthquake struck at 2:46 p.m. I'm all over the place tonight.
2:46 p.m.
Yeah, 2:46 p.m. The early estimate of magnitude 8.9 was later revised. The epicenter was 80 miles east of the city of Sendai, Miyagi Prefecture.
Yeah, all the little, it must be like
there's a series of islands.
Areas.
Right. So, and the focus occurred at a depth of so this is like 18 miles under sea that this happened. The earthquake was caused by the rupture of a stretch of the subduction zone associated with the Japan Trench, which separates the Eurasian plate from the subducting Pacific plate. Yeah.
Yeah. Two big plates.
Two big plates went and created a 20 miles under the sea. The earthquake triggered tsunami warnings throughout the Pacific Basin. The tsunami raced outward from the epicenter at speeds of about 500 miles an hour.
Jesus.
It generated waves 11 to 12 feet high along the coasts of Kauai and Hawaii in the Hawaiian island chains, and 5-foot waves along the islands of Shemya and the Aleutian Islands, which is up in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Several hours later, 9-foot tsunami waves struck the coast of California and Oregon in North America. 18 hours after the quake, waves roughly a foot high reached the coast of Antarctica.
Wow.
And caused a portion of the Salzburger ice shelf to break off its outer edge.
Wow.
The subsequent tsunami brought about catastrophic damage to the 3 prefectures of Fukushima, Miyagi, and Iwate. All right, these are Japanese names.
Yeah.
I am not Japanese, right? Be patient. And in particular, the area from the southern part of Miyagi Prefecture to the coastal regions of the Iwate Prefecture. This is because of the geographical characteristics of the region, which has a series of peninsulas and deep bays and inlets that are referred to in geographical terms as Ria Coast, RIA. The structure of this coastline means that when a tsunami strikes it, it tends to increase greatly in height once it reaches the coast due to the Ria Coast characteristics of the Iwate Prefecture coastline.
I think because it's like narrower.
It narrows it out and brings
higher.
It up higher.
Yeah.
At its highest point, the tsunami reached a height of approximately 38 meters and damage was spread along a 600 kilometer. I don't know meters and kilometers, but 38 meters, I think it was like 50 feet high, which is pretty fucking high. Because if you figured each 10 feet is a story high, that's a 5-story building coming in. 600 kilometer stretch of the coast. It went pretty, pretty far. So, this is some of the statistics of what happened from that day. A wave measuring some 33 feet high inundated the coast and flooded parts of the city of Sendai, including its airport and the surrounding countrysides. Following the major earthquake, a 15-meter tsunami disabled the power supply and cooling of 3 Fukushima Daiichi reactors, causing a nuclear accident beginning on March 11th of 2011. All 3 cores largely melted in the first 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
The accident was rated level 7 on the International Nuclear and Radiological Event Scale due to high radioactive releases over 4 to 6 days. It gets into how much it released. None of us are going to know what that means. All 4 Fukushima Daiichi reactors were written off due to damage in the accident. After 2 weeks, the 3 reactors were stable with water addition, and by July, they were being cooled with recycled water from the new treatment plant. July, that's 3 months. Like, yeah. These people... How they reacted to this was no joke. There have been no deaths or causes of radiation sickness from the nuclear accident, but over 100,000 people were evacuated from their homes as a preventative measure. All right. So as of September 21st, 2011, 6 months after the disaster struck, the official numbers of victims in Japan was at 15,799 dead and 4,041 missing. So what happens, though, is... when it comes in and it recedes, it took people, houses, cars, miles and miles out in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
You're never finding them again. The fatalities were approximately 3 times the number claimed by the Great Hanshin Hawaji earthquake in 1995, which was the largest natural disaster in recent times until the tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
The number of casualties in the Iwate Prefecture alone was 46,000 and 1,600 missing. Let's see. Electricity, water, and gas were all cut off in the disaster, although they were restored in 2 to 3 days to inland areas that escaped tsunami damage. The coastal areas took about a month and a half for electricity to be restored and 4 months for water supply. All normal means of communication were also lost in the disaster and in the initial aftermath. So approximately 2 weeks, only satellite mobile phones functioned, and these did not always work. It was for this reason that in the initial post-disaster period, local governments were restricted in their attempt to assess and evaluate the damage.
Mm-hmm.
There was no public transportation in the coastal areas. Even though most of the local residents used vehicles to go about their daily lives, many of these were washed away in the tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, roads were damaged or blocked, meaning that access to and travel within the disaster regions was very difficult. The inland cities that were expected to provide backup functions in times of emergency all relied exclusively on cars for assistance. So they couldn't even get anything in because there's no way to get in. Travel between the inland and coast took between 2 to 3 hours. In addition, there was an initial lack of gasoline and health and welfare workers experienced difficulties in procuring gasoline for the vehicles to go about their health and medical support activities. Mm-hmm. In the coastal areas of Iwate Prefecture, three hospitals were entirely destroyed by the tsunami, and approximately half of all clinics and other health facilities were damaged in some way. Many local government personnel, including public health personnel, were affected by the disaster also, resulting in local government functions, which are expected to play a central role in post-disaster response, being entirely paralyzed or severely restricted. Mm-hmm. So when you see videos of the tsunami hitting, it's terrifying.
It's awful.
It's fucking terrifying. Mm-hmm. And the cities they're talking about, one of them is almost like New Orleans. It's a little lower than the ocean. And it was like, you could see the walls. They'd built up the walls and everything around it. And it's just fucking gone. Everything mm-hmm. was gone. So take it away, Sparkles.
All right. I got this information from Britannica.com, PBS.org, CNN.com, USWorld.com, and NBCNews.com. So 300 of the 380 hospitals in the three affected prefectures in Tohoku were damaged, and 11 completely collapsed. The estimated death toll is 18,500. Fewer than 100 deaths occurred outside Iwate, Miyagi, and Fukushima.
So those places got decimated.
Decimated. Miyagi Prefecture suffered the greatest losses, 10,800 killed and 4,100 injured. Most of the people killed drowned in the tsunami waters. More than half of the dead were 65 or older.
Oh.
And that's because these were small rural coastal towns. And they have high elderly populations because the young people have left to go work in cities. So very high elderly populations in their rural.
Right. Hard to get to on a good day.
Hard to get to. Lower income. Mm-hmm. Due to the cold, it's winter. It was March 11th. It's winter there. It's freezing. Due to the cold, wet, exposed conditions, there was a high incidence of respiratory problems, especially pneumonia. When the tsunami waves swept in, many could not get to high ground fast enough because they were elderly.
Yeah.
In their coastal towns. So, you know, the whole, you know, you're near the ocean, everything's low.
Yep.
Behind the town
is mountains.
Are hills, which that's their like evacuation zones. But you have to be able to climb the hills. You have to be able to get there before a tsunami comes.
And wipes you out.
Medicine and food are swept away. There's no food.
Oh, I never even thought of that.
People don't have their medicine anymore. Right. Like, the pills you take in an elderly population to control your blood pressure, your heart, all that stuff, diabetes, they're gone. Everything is gone. The elderly that did not die immediately in the waves died of dehydration, malnutrition, and a lack of medicine shortly after. A total of 128 disaster medical assistant teams, each team consisted of 1 to 2 doctors, 1 to 2 nurses, and 1 administrator, provided emergency medical care in Iwate Prefecture for the 9 days following the tsunami alone. They transported patients out of the area to medical facilities and evacuation centers. They also provided care to patients that could not be moved out of the area. They were using helicopters to get these people out of there.
So you couldn't get in because
they couldn't drive in. In the peak time period after the tsunami, there were a total of 399 evacuation centers in Iwate Prefecture alone. The main medical problem seen after the tsunami, especially in this elderly population, was hypertension. You don't have meds. The food that was given when
stressed.
It was finally given was
salt.
It's preserved, so it's all salt. The stress of the everything you own is gone. Right. You can't find family members.
Where am I going to go?
Hypertension was rampant. DVTs, people can't move around. They're dehydrated.
Or they're injured.
Yeah. Respiratory problems, like I said, it's wet, it's cold, you're swallowing water.
Ugh, salt water.
There's mold everywhere, and there's dust particles, like from buildings falling collapsing, and all that, you're breathing all that in. And then mental and psychosocial health was abysmal.
Yeah.
You've lost everything you've ever had. You look around and just see destruction.
The Japanese people are so stoic. They really are.
They are.
They're organized. They're stoic. They're mourning, but they figure like, you know, pick yourself up and you
they go
keep
on.
Going.
But they said there was a lot of.
I believe it.
Yeah. So there's a couple. I found a couple articles about specific hospitals. And then there was this documentary that Michelle had sent us. It's an NHK documentary called A Hospital Once Stood by the Sea. 12 years since the tsunami. And this documentary looks at the community hospital in the seaside town of Ogatsu. I'm sure I'm not saying that right. So there is now like, you see these big seawalls, and then there's, it looks like a big parking lot, and there's this memorial. And I'm thinking this memorial is going to be huge. It's like this little stone memorial, very pretty. And it has, it lists names of people. And that is all that stands at the site of where Ogatsu Hospital once stood. The hospital was a huge part of the community. It's like in this little rural town, seaside town. The staff were like all locals. Mm-hmm. The man who was the, you know, medical CEO director or whatever, was a local. It was the only hospital around that did surgery, so everybody went there.
Oh, yeah.
The people of Ogatsu were extremely familiar with the hospital, the staff. That's where they got all their care. And it had been provided the care in that town for 56 years. As the population aged, the long-term care and hospice units were opened in the hospital to care for the aging population. So they were like, okay, everybody's getting older. We don't need this. We need long-term mm-hmm. care. Staff treated the bedridden long-term care patients like they were their own family. They bathed them. They washed their feet. They would heat up water and then soak cloths in it and then just rub the patients with the warm cloths just to make them feel...
Real nursing care?
Yeah. Real nursing care. Just to make them feel like ease their aches and like feel warm. And patients who were immobile would have like hand... You know, people have hand contractions when you're stuck in your bed and you're not moving. And this one nurse, like, you know, they smelled because your hand is stuck. Oh, so everything smells. So they would make these warm compresses with tea leaves in them and stuff and put them into their hands so they would loosen and they would smell nice. Like they really
tried,
cared for these people. Like it might not have, I mean, I'm sure they also did other nursing things, but they were just caring for them like you were home caring for a family member. When they would be like firework displays every once in a while outside, they would move all the patients in the long-term care areas so everybody could see out the window because they're like, there was a celebration. These people couldn't go anywhere. So we would move them all to make sure they felt like they were part of the celebration and make them feel festive. Families of the patients felt like their loved ones were well cared for and they were being treated like they were family. Mm-hmm. On the day of the tsunami, March 11, 2011, the hospital director and 27 staff were at the hospital. They made the decision to try to save the 40 patients in the long-term units when the tsunami warnings were announced. Most of the patients were elderly, obviously, and had trouble moving, walking, they were bedridden.
What I should have gone into is how much time between the warning and the tsunami there is.
I couldn't find the exact amount of time
anyway. I don't
think
it's a long time.
No. No, it wasn't.
Right.
But what these people who have like firsthand... I'll get into it, but it was not long. The staff didn't escape and run for the evacuation point, which was like a hill right, kind of right behind the hospital. You can see the hospital from the hill because they felt it was their responsibility to protect their patients. One resident of the town went to the hospital that day to pick up medicine for his grandparents on March 11th. He pulled into the parking lot and the earthquake kicked. He said, patients and staff came out of the hospital. So there's other patients in there, not just long, you know, getting their medicine, whatever they're in there for. They came out of the hospital like after the earthquake and the tsunami warning is going on the radio and you can hear it like kind of through the town. And he said there's probably like 15 to 20 people standing outside the hospital. And one guy's like, you guys get up to the evacuation point, get up to the evacuation point. The tsunami's coming. And they said the staff were like, no, we have our patients inside and all turned and went back inside.
Oh, wow.
I
don't know. I don't know if I could do that.
I know.
I'd like to think I could. I don't know if I would.
I know. The 40 patients were on the third floor. People who fled to the evacuation site could see the hospital in front of them. Like they look in because the hospital's directly in front of the water. So they're looking at the hospital and they can see like four or five people on the roof at one point and they can see the water moving in. And the people on the roof are moving frantically, they said. And then all of a sudden, the water was at the top of the building.
Oh, my God.
The wave was higher than the building was tall.
So it enveloped everything.
They came in. It went. It just, they said, like, the second it came in, it was, like, first, second, third, fourth. Like, it was immediately up to the roof. The people they saw on the roof were four staff members that had wrapped a patient in a sheet and carried them to the roof to try to escape the freezing waters that were coming up through the floors. Only one of these staff members was saved after being swept away by the tsunami. He grabbed onto like a, you know, random floating something. He was eventually saved. Three other staff members were saved after being swept away at different points, not from those people on the, they weren't one of the five on the roof. No other patients were ever moved to the roof because they couldn't get them out fast enough. That was the one patient they could get out. And that patient died. Yeah. It just, the water came in too quick to be able to move anybody else out. All 40 patients and 24 staff members drowned in the freezing tsunami waters in the hospital.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. Four staff members were out working, like doing home calls that day. One guy, I think he was like the boiler guy, and he would drive the nurses around to their home visits. And so the earthquake hits, they hear the tsunami warning, and they are trying to get back to the hospital to help the staff.
Get I would the think patients there's no way you're getting back there with the chaos.
So the road is blocked with debris. They can't get through. And they all survive. One of them states, I think it was the guy that worked in like the boiler room. He states like they were lucky to have not been there. They were just lucky that they weren't at the hospital that day. He feels bad that those people died, but he was like, we're very lucky. And then they interview this other woman who was a nurse. And she feels that she should have tried harder to get back to the hospital. She thinks if she had tried to walk, she may have gotten there in time.
To die. Like it's, you would have gotten there in time to die.
I know. And she wanted to help her coworkers and her patients. She's just the guilt she has over not being there.
I understand that, but it wasn't nothing you were going to do was going to fix what happened.
She's especially torn because she worked with her friend Toshi, who had been her friend since grade school. They went to grade school together. They went to nursing school together. They worked at that hospital together. Toshi wasn't working that day, the day of the tsunami. She's home. Her daughter, who works in a hospital, I think she's a dietitian, not in that hospital, in a different town, was at work, and she hears there's a tsunami warning coming for those areas. And she's like, I know my parents are home. Her father was a retired firefighter, and her mother was a nurse. And she's like, I know my parents are both off today. And she's like, and I know they're both going to go to work. And she said the second she heard the tsunami warning, she said, I know my mother's going to go to that hospital. Her mother rushes to the hospital immediately. And she said, that's exactly... Like she wouldn't have done anything else. And Toshi died at that hospital trying to help her coworkers and patients. Her daughter, it's awful because like she was about to get married and the mother was like so excited to have grandkids. And she's, you can see it. Like she doesn't say exactly this, but she's like, I tell my daughter, if anything happens, you take care of yourself first. You don't worry about anybody else. Right. Take care of yourself. She's, I have kids now. I wouldn't go to that hospital. That's so you can tell she's up.
Okay. I'm going to sound like an asshole for saying this. I wouldn't have left. I will help in other ways. I don't know if I would have like, I say that, but then I think if something happened where we work, yeah, I'd immediately go in. But
that's the thing. We've been in situations where you
would go
there's an emergency and they're like, okay, I'm going.
But the emergencies we get are not flood warnings coming in or like a massive fire that's going to take down the building or bombing. It's like something happened, a bus crash or a massive shooting.
Well, with the bombings, we all went in.
Yes. Yes. True.
Yeah.
But still, I'm still going to take my chance with that over a tsunami.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
The tsunami.
Where my hospital faces the ocean. I think I'm going to take my chances.
Yeah. But her daughter, it's awful because she's like, I know she's that's what she did. Now. She was very
giving.
She loved her patients. Her coworkers were her family. Like, I get why she did it, but I wish I could say to her, you need to worry about yourself.
Right.
So I feel bad because she's very torn.
Tainted. Yeah.
They interview patients' families. And they're all like, I'm just so glad they didn't leave them.
They weren't alone.
They weren't alone. And I get that. I hope I would be big enough to say, I wish they left. Because my mother or whoever was not going to survive.
I would be telling the nurses, get the fuck out of here.
Right.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm 100. Get out of here.
Right. You would hope you would have that. But then I think you're also just so scared. Like, oh, if you get me up to the roof, I'll be okay. You know, like, so yeah. I mean, it's just a terrible, and it's quick, and it's fast.
In 5 days of memorial, in one of those nursing homes, they left them.
Yeah.
They left those people to drown.
Yeah. So they're very thankful that the staff stayed with the patients. The staff families that were interviewed mostly say that the staff had no choice. They're like, how can you
leave?
How can you leave? Someone's in a bed saying, help me. How do you turn around and leave them? They said they couldn't. They couldn't have lived with the guilt if they did leave.
Right.
And then they said, but a few feel that all people are equal, right? Like everybody has equal rights, healthy, elderly, immobile. Everybody deserves the same. Everybody's life is worth the same.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't feel that they all should have died there because some of them would have died anyways.
Right. I agree.
So they're very torn. It's awful because
Because you said, how do you leave them?
They're like, I know they couldn't have left them.
How do you
never
decide who's
going like to
stay behind?
Right.
But, I mean, I think, I don't even know if some of those staff members would have made it out in time.
No, probably. That's, I mean, that's the thing. Like, they did rescue, like, three random people. I think one guy was like, there was a boat literally going by and I grabbed onto it. You know, like a boat that was being swept out and that's how he got saved. But, so that was that. It's a very good documentary. But the memorial has every single person's name on it. And then there's like a little thing in front and they put like incense in there and stuff and pray. And then there was this story about the, I'm never going to say this, at Sanan General Hospital in Miyagi.
Mr. Miyagi?
That's one of the prefectures. Sanan General Hospital was very badly damaged. There were about 200 patients there on March 11th. All food and medicine was stored on the first floor. So that means everything was ruined or lost in 30 minutes. Four patients died on the first 2 days after the tsunami. 80 patients that could be moved were moved to a shelter. The rest were stuck at the hospital with no power, no running water, no medicine, and barely any food that could be scrapped up. The stench from the bathroom without running water that hundreds of people had to use was smelled half a building away.
Ugh.
No aid came from the government for the first 2 days, like you said, because it was like hardly any communication. People in the neighborhood somehow had like rice balls that they dropped off, and the people could have one rice ball in the morning and one rice ball at night.
Oh my God.
All they had.
And it's just rice.
Yeah. More than 125 elderly patients, many of whom were comatose, were abandoned by medical staff at a hospital 6 miles from the Fukushima nuclear plant. At least 14 died. At least 11 men and women perished inside a retirement home in Kesanuma, where they were left freezing for 6 days.
Oh, my God. That's terrible. Mm-hmm.
At Takata Hospital, the tsunami engulfed every floor. There were 51 patients hospitalized. Doctors and nurses could not save 12 of them who drowned in their beds. They did save the 40.
They tried.
But, I mean, there's only so much time.
Dude, if you're comatose, I'm sorry. I'm out. Because you don't even know what's going on.
One patient died as he was being moved to the roof, and two more died on the roof in the freezing temperatures. 10 staff also died there. One while getting the satellite phone on the first floor. So, like you said, every communication was out. They had an emergency satellite phone. It was on the first floor.
Where's immediately going to flood?
So he did. He went down there. He gets the phone. He throws it to the coworker as the water engulfs him. But he got the phone to them. And then there's this lovely story. This is actually a nice story. Well, it's just cool. So Ishinomaki Red Cross Hospital is a 5-story, 402-bed hospital that still functions as it did before, during, and immediately following the tsunami.
Wow.
It was built in 2006 to replace a hospital that was located along the waterfront because the old hospital was vulnerable to a tsunami. They said, we have to stop. We can't use this hospital anymore. We got to build a new one.
Well, sounds like they did the right thing.
Move it back. The hospital shook for 3 minutes straight during the earthquake. Then the staff walked into a well-lit conference room to implement their emergency plan. No staff or patients were harmed. No medical equipment was damaged. It treated 4,000 patients within the first 7 days after the disaster. Normally, it only treats 60 patients a day.
Oh, my God.
Why? Why could they do this? Because it was built to withstand earthquakes and tsunamis. It's like an engineering
feat.
Miracle.
I mean, that's
they
amazing.
They did it. This shit's unbelievable. So the basement surrounds the hospital like a moat. The building floats above the basement on spring-like structures made of rubber and steel. It's like it is balancing on hundreds of large pogo sticks.
Wow.
It is called base isolation.
So does it raise as the water goes?
It sits above it. It like the moat, I think, somehow lets it sit above. It doesn't, it's not like
right,
my house is on the ground.
Like if the water floods it, does it come up with the...
No, it's also on a high point though.
Okay.
It's not like down in front of the water. So it's called base isolation, which provides shock absorbers that cushion the 5-story hospital. Ground motion doesn't reach the hospital. Like it shook on those little
pogo sticks,
but it wasn't shaking like the earth. The building is also equipped with like O2 outlets and power outlets to multiple generators like everywhere, like behind walls, everywhere are O2 outfits. So if you're in an office,
you have an O2
there's
outfit.
Plugs, there's O2, there's
awesome.
Gas, like there's all this stuff they can use. So they can put patients
anywhere,
anywhere in waiting rooms, in right. offices. They can all be turned into patient bay areas.
That's amazing.
So it was literally made to treat mass amounts of people in emergency
situations.
So this hospital had just gone up like 5 years before the tsunami and it treated 4,000 people.
And
within
it
a
survived
week.
All of it. So
nothing was wrong with it. They said it was ran on a generator. I think they like some of the lights weren't as bright or something stupid like that. It was unbelievable. But so more hospitals like that need to be built.
Yeah.
No, I guess there's hospitals that are built like that in Oregon too, because they have a lot of earthquakes. So there are hospitals that
Oregon,
use the
California.
same engineering.
The only time I ever felt an earthquake, I was in Alaska on vacation. And I was on an air mattress and I was sharing it with my girlfriend. And the whole mattress starts shaking. And I whack her. The mattress starts shaking again. I'm like, cut the shit. She's like, I'm not doing anything. I'm like, well, why are you fucking shaking the mattress? She's like, I'm not shaking the mattress. We get up for breakfast. Like, did you feel the earthquake? I'm like, oh, sorry.
I felt one in Malden, my mother's house in Malden. I was in bed and I was like, what is shaking my bed?
Yeah.
Like, I thought.
The demons, Laura.
I was like, what is happening? Like, why is my bed move, like is someone jump? Like I didn't know if like right. my sister was like jumping on the shaking the. I was like, what is happening? I was like, I don't know what that was. And then later there was an earthquake in Bod. I was like, oh my god, that's what that was.
Well, we just had one this last past weekend. Yeah. This yeah. past weekend. So my son was in Western Mass, and that's where supposedly he was supposed to feel it. So I text him like, did you feel the earthquake? What are you talking about? I'm like, oh god, just he probably could be in the middle of it and would be like, I don't know what you're talking about because he's oblivious to everything.
Yeah, my cousin said he was on like a Zoom meeting, like, you know, and there's people from like all over the mm-hmm. eastern area and everybody, and someone was like within like a few miles of him and they were all like, oh my god, what is that? And he's like, what are you talking about? And they're like, what is that? And they were all like, oh my god, there was an earthquake. And they like all felt, he's like, I didn't feel one thing. He's like, the other person was like 2 miles from me and I still didn't
well,
feel
you can
like
see
one
some
thing.
Of the video they had from that, like you see the dogs freaking
yeah,
out,
the dogs
and
freak
you can
out.
See people like losing some stuff falling off of you know, shelves and stuff. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't, you know what? I'm not the biggest fan of New England weather. I really am not. We've discussed this. I fucking hate the winters. But
yes,
we don't have wildfires, mm-hmm. earthquakes, tornadoes, hurricanes, tsunamis.
We do, but they're little. Mike, they're not big ones.
By like, the time we get a hurricane, the nor'easters are worse. All right. Yeah. It's like, poof, that's it. There's your hurricane. Okay.
Oh, I think he means all. Like, we've been getting tornadoes, but they're small tornadoes.
They're little. Are we getting a Joplin, Missouri tornado? No, we're not. All right. We don't have wildfires. We don't have tsunamis. Yeah. Like, I'll take my blizzards. I can shovel that shit out and have bake a couple
so
of cookies and call it a day.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's our tsunami episode, the best we could come up with. Love our emails that we've been getting. Please send us more.
Yes.
More. Mm-hmm. And what else have we got, Laura? There's a solar eclipse happening tomorrow.
It'll already
Laura's
have happened.
Laura's going to drive to Vermont to go see
it. I guess we're just going to New Hampshire now. Plans are changing every minute by minute here.
Why not Vermont? What happened?
I think that's going to be more congested.
You think? You think? It's going to be like the Bay of Fundy. All the people are going to just collapse the state of Vermont. It's going to be ridiculous.
New Hampshire looks like it has better weather, too.
So. You know where I'm going to watch it? I'm going to watch it from Boston.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to see 92% of it.
Yeah.
That's good enough for me.
That's not enough for Mike.
That's good enough for me. Mm-hmm. Because I'm working for you, so you can go
Thank
see
you.
The eclipse.
Appreciate
in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
So I hope it's as good as it is in Vermont, since I have to work Monday.
Oh, it's 100% totality,
okay,
though.
Good. Mm-hmm. Good. Okay.
Wear your glasses.
I have them ready to roll. I'll put them in my pocket at work.
Yep.
Take off to go see the eclipse for the 3 minutes they'll let me outside.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's only 3 minutes long.
I know. My son's like, I wanted to take leave to go see it. I'm like, I sent him and his friend's glasses. I'm like, wear your glasses. You'll see it off the
put
boat.
Put them in your pocket. Yeah, they
I'll
can
be able
see
to
it
see
at the
boat.
Boat.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
The sun's in the sky.
Yeah. It's going to be, you'll see some of it.
Right.
So enjoy the eclipse. Don't go blind.
No. Wear
we
the
should
glasses.
Have covered an episode on what happens when you look at a solar eclipse dead on. You go blind. And enjoy. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
It'll be May.
Send us some, we're using a lot of your ideas.
Yeah.
So send us more ideas. We're loving them. And be safe. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Like, subscribe, rate, and review the Scissors and Scrubs podcast on whatever podcast app you listen to us on. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Scissors and Scrubs. And email us any of your stories or thoughts to scissorsandscrubs@gmail.com.